Thank you for traveling with Amex Platinum. To your right, you'll see Oceanside Relaxation at a fine hotel and resort property. When booked through Amex Travel, you can enjoy complimentary breakfast for 2 and 4 p.m. late checkout. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win.
How do you play? How do you work when you're not at your best?
Coach Cal and I'll share some wisdom from our time coaching, and we'll apply that wisdom to your off-court challenges.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Hey, what up? Welcome in. I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is All Ball. Man, we're right in the heart of college basketball season. A lot of good stories. But this weekend, Duke, Carolina, part one. So we thought we would give you part two of my pod with Tyler Hansborough. Well, we left off with part one. Of course, you can go back and listen. It's in your queue, I'm sure. Yeah, listen to it. But if you don't, just type in All Ball, Tyler Hansborough. You'll see part one. We left off junior season, Final Four. That's when they got blown out, okay, by Kansas. Got down big, came back, ball in the air to tie it, lose, okay? That's about the time where we left off with pod one. Let's catch back up with Tebow.
So you get ready for your junior year. You're super motivated. You didn't like your sophomore year. Do you remember your first game your junior year?
Let's see here.
Played Davidson.
Yeah, so Davidson.
They had a guard, Steph Curry. Yeah. And I'm wondering at that time, what did you know anything about Steph Curry when you step on the floor against this kid?
Really didn't. No, Steph wasn't. You know, Davidson's a tough team. They're one of those teams that mid major that, you know, always kind of sneaks into a tournament or whatever, and you got to take him serious. But no, Steph wasn't Steph then. I think Steph really started blowing up later in the year and then started making tournament run. Yeah. And then the next year's
one. That was the year. No, that was the year that they made the run. That was the year that they lost to Kansas in the Elite Eight. Otherwise, they would have played in the Final Four. Right, that's crazy. Like your first game, yeah, you go out there, you're playing Davidson, like,
Yeah. And so they actually gave us a pretty decent game. I remember because I got a technical foul that game, and Coach Williams chewed me out for doing that. I'm not sure what I did. Maybe I pushed or talked a little smack, but I remember Coach yelling at me on the bench, asking me how could I be so stupid. I remember that from that game, Now, Steph wasn't Steph then, but he was building up to becoming, you know, the, you know, Steph Curry that everyone knows today. But they gave us a run.
Who gave you the psycho T nickname?
Our strength coach, one of my best friends, Jonas Serration, I love, you know, I'm a big workout guy. And so I built a good relationship with the strength coach at UNC. He was actually at Kansas when I visited. And then he eventually ended up at UNC with Coach Williams. And, you know, I like to work out. So we built a relationship. My freshman year, he gave me that nickname because I was a very quiet kid. And then all of a sudden, you know, I have a little switch and I'd start talking and everything. So then he started calling me, you know, screaming a little bit in the weight room, you know, just, you know, meathead stuff. And then he gave me the nickname Psycho T. And then so when everyone else started calling me Psycho T, he stopped. And he was like, no, it's too mainstream now. I can't call you that. And so
then what did he call you?
Anybody from my hometown calls me, T-bone. That's what they use because I'm tall and bony. And so when I was a kid, so that's how I know if you really know me that from back in the day in high school, call me T-bone, T-hands. So he calls me T-hands, T-bone, or Hansborough. But that's all he calls me now. Which he
when you're lifting, do you go Metallica? Do you go hardcore rap? When you go full meathead, What do you listen to?
AC/DC. And Help.
Now, the only thing about AC/DC is, I don't know if you know this. They all sound the same, right? Doesn't matter the song, right? Because I'm back in black. Right? They all sound, they are, it's a kick-ass hard rocking band. Okay, but they all sound the same. So, what's your go-to? Thunderstruck, Back in Black.
Hell's Bells.
Hell's Bells.
Yeah.
Hell's Bells.
Great song. And so he actually, back in college, we listened to Guns N' Roses a little bit too.
Fuck yeah. This is weightlifting music, right?
Yeah.
Like, give me something to flip the switch, right? To get the flip.
That was our music. And, you know, if we wanted to mix up, we went Eminem, which Eminem's pretty dark and a little different, but. Yeah, those were our go-to jams back in the day, and still get them going today.
So like the junior, obviously, is super super special. If you think of it, you close your eyes, like what's the most vivid game memory before you get to the Final Four? What's the memory that pops up?
There's actually a few games from my junior year.
All right, go. Go.
There's a game we played Virginia Tech in the middle of the season. And I remember I didn't play much that game, but I felt like that was one of the most efficient games I'd played. It was in the Smith Center. And even though my staff,
you guys kicked the shit. You guys beat them by 40.
We beat the brakes off of them. And I remember
you had 23 in 29 minutes. That's pretty efficient.
Yeah. And I remember I was like, man, I didn't really, you know, I felt like I could have played more, but I just felt like I had everything going that game. And I felt like that was one of the best games I played. My junior year, obviously, is one of the best dunks of my career. Is I get on a fast break. I'm not sure if it's against College of Charleston or whatever it is. It's one of the early games in the year. I remember that dunk. I remember the Virginia Tech game. And then, but I remember, you know, Ty was in and out dealing with some injuries. And so I remember just playing really well in conference play and had a lot going for me. My confidence was pretty high my junior year. And, yeah, I felt like I played pretty well then. And then, obviously, when we got to the Final Four, I felt like we were too satisfied with just getting to the Final Four and then got railroaded by Kansas.
Yeah, you got smacked by Kansas.
Yeah.
Mac.
That was when they
got out to a huge lead, right?
Yep.
And you guys kind of made it a game. It's in San Antonio. But what was that like to be down so big? What was Coach Williams like?
Well, first of all, there was a ton of emotion in that game because Coach Williams, it's his first game against Kansas being at Carolina. And you know, there was a lot of angry. I think KU had a lot of, you know, fight in them, not just from like the energy in the arena. I mean, Kansas travels. I mean, Kansas, they packed the whole place, and the energy in there, it felt like a road game for us. And I remember we just came out and laid an egg, and we actually had a shot. Danny Green, top of the key, I think would have tied it that three. But kind of rolled out, and we had kind of fought our way back, but our tank was on E by the time that, you know, we even had a shot. We had just gotten down in the hole so much that we clawed our way back, and we just didn't have the fight because we were just gassed from even making it a game. And, you know, that was a tough loss. One, because – you know, we wanted to win that game for Coach Williams, but also, you know, the way we lost, we got steamrolled. So that was motivating. And, you know, in a way, I think that game kind of shaped it for us to win it my senior year. And the reason I say that is because, you know, when you take a loss like that, you realize getting to the Final Four is cool, but, you know, the job is to win the national championship. You don't want to be just happy getting there. And I think that's what we all realize, that, hey, you know, we want to win the thing. If we're going to go to the Final Four, let's win the damn thing.
So you decide to come back. So there was no discussion about You know, you didn't ask grandpa, you didn't ask your mom and dad.
I did talk to my grandpa. He's like, go back. And then it wasn't short. I just like, you know, it was just like, yeah, you go back to school. And so by that point, you know, I had such a good, I had built up such a good career at UNC. What's an extra year in college going to do? And it wasn't like, you know, if I was a top five pick, I probably would have entertained it a little bit. But the reality was that I was projected mid, you know, first round. And I felt like another year in college wasn't going to damage that. But, you know, going into my senior year, it was a very difficult year for me. And there was a lot of expectations. But also, I was dealing with a stress fracture in my shin. And I don't know what it was, but something wasn't right. So I had worked so hard in the offseason that I started getting a stress reaction, stress fracture, whatever. And so I was having a ton of pain in my shin. And I thought it was shin splints. And so I, you know, was going through conditioning. Finally, you know, I couldn't sleep at night. I was having a lot of pain. Then we realized, you know, after an MRI that I had this stress reaction. And so, you know, I had to step away and kind of take it easy and let that heal. But that was right before the season. And so that was that's a bad time to kind of be sitting out because you can't really prepare like you want to. And so, you know, I had put a lot of pressure on myself, and mentally it was difficult because how it is when you prepare, you know, a big part of that is psychological, knowing that you put the work in to prepare is going to put your mind at ease a little bit and give you the confidence. And I didn't really feel like I had that for my senior year because I was more catering to trying to get healthy and stay healthy, which that shin actually continued to bother me my whole year. And my first year with the Pacers, I actually had to miss a big chunk of time because of that shin.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing.
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win.
How do you play? How do you work when you're not at your best?
Coach Cal and I will share some wisdom from our time coaching, and we'll apply that wisdom to your off-court challenges.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
What's that like to carry that burden of, because it's one of those, we do this weird thing in the media where we want you to come back, you know, and then when you come back, we kind of hyper-focus and have a tendency to pick you apart. Fans do it probably even more so than what's that like to be that guy under that microscope?
Well, I think it's natural. I mean, you know, I've always had this theory that, you know, the more people watch you, the less impressed they're going to be because they're going to start seeing your flaws. And a big part of that is because when, you know, I feel like when NBA scouts watch a player, it's not necessarily like you see some player just pops on the scene. Everyone's like, oh, this player's going to be really good. But a lot of people haven't seen him yet. But also, you've watched some player in college for 3 years who's a very good player, probably going to be a decent pro. You totally go with the guy that you haven't seen that much because you haven't really seen his flaws as often. And you kind of view it as, you know, what you're not sometimes. But, you know, for me, when I made that decision, well, when I made that decision to come back to school, I think Ty Lawson had made the decision to come back to school as well. And so, you know, we made that jointly at the same time. We talked to Coach, and Ty's a different cat. I mean, Ty said he's coming back to school and then declared as a joke to play a joke on Coach, what I actually thought was hilarious.
What did Coach say?
So we were having our basketball banquet, and before the banquet, Coach pulled us in and he just said, you know, you guys sure you want to come back? I just want to make sure before it's public. He's like, we're both like, absolutely will come back. Yeah, we're still the same. And so we had the banquet. Ty gets on the mic and he goes, I've really enjoyed my time at UNC. And I'm going to go this year. I'm declaring for the draft. And kind of leaves, and the whole place is just quiet. And then you see Coach Williams just kind of like tapping Coach Rob and the assistants. And then he walks back up there. He's like, no, I'm just joking, guys. And it's one of the best pranks I've seen. Ty's a pretty funny guy. And I wish more people saw that. But when we declared, it was also the last day of class. And that's when, you know, anybody that's been to, you know, college, you realize it's a big party day. And so I remember me and Frazier and some other, you know, teammates, we had this text chain, hey, what are we doing? Like, where are we going? What frat, blah, blah, blah. And that's where I jumped off that roof into that pool. And also Marcus Skinner did it. Bobby Frazier did it, who Frazier was just coming off an ACL injury, which he got a lot of attention for that, which was comical, that we all ended up in the newspaper and all over everywhere, it seemed like, for jumping off that roof. And I just thought it was funny because Frazier, you know, hasn't played in a year, but he's jumping off a frat house into a small pool coming off an ACL injury.
What was the frat that you were did you have like certain frats that you like to hang with, or just like whoever would hit you up?
No, I wasn't at the no, I didn't go to many frat houses. I was more, you know, kind of go out to bar. The bar guy. So
yeah. Bar. What kind of favorite beer is what? What favorite cold beer is what?
Oh man. we used to drink Yingling in college. And yeah,
sure. Okay.
I don't know how we had a Yingling.
Yeah, who's the Pittsburgh? Isn't it? That's a big in Pittsburgh. Yeah, right?
And so
I want to know who brought Yingling to the Carolina party.
Marcus Skinner, got to give him credit for that. He had the beer guy, and so it was that and Miller Lite, and so I gravitated towards the Miller Lite. But we played beer pong with the Yingling because we could get like. We had so much Yingling just kind of laying around. And I remember, man, I was like, man, guys, this beer's a little thicker. And so it made the beer pong games, you know, it made it a lot more interesting, depending on which, you know.
Who was the best beer pong player on your Carolina team?
I could tell you, Marcus Guignard had a tolerance for alcohol that I haven't seen a lot of people have. So he was pretty impressive.
It's like a hollow leg. Guys that have that hollow leg, it's just amazing.
Yeah, he was so very impressive.
I played with a guy, Joe Atkins, and our senior year, Joe, Coach, you know, he and Coach Williams were very close. And Coach called us in and said, you know, I've been talking to some of you guys. And it's great. Y'all made the decision to stay out of the bars this year. And we're looking around like, the fuck is he talking about? There wasn't a single guy that would ever say that. He's like, you know, so you guys came to that agreement. It's great. You know, you want to go to the bar. You got to go together. Because we had this. We always said no stray dogs, right? You're going out. You ain't going out by yourself. That shit does not end well, you know? So, you know, stray dogs, you know, you want to go have a beer, but you're going to stay out of the bars. So literally the next day we had a junior college transfer, this guy, Jason Keep. And I don't know if you ever remember Jason Keep, 6'11", 275, had Big Daddy on his tattooed on his arm, only D-A-D-Y. So we called him Big Daddy. He had worked on an oil rig in like a gap year. Anyway, this fucker gets into a bar fight in his Oklahoma State basketball gear, like the next day after Coach announced we had decided to stay out of the bars. But Joe Atkins, because we decided to stay out of the bars, like we're like trying to go dry. Like, Cole, we're not going to drink. We're going to focus. Like, we want to win the whole thing. We're really good, top 10 in the country. So he starts out, he's shooting terribly to start the year. Can't make a shot. So he announces to us that like, yo, DG, this shit ain't working for me. Like, I got to drink. But so not the night before the game, two nights for the game, he would buy a case of beer and we'd all go over and we'd, you know, do case race. We'd all empty the case, right? Sometimes there'd be like two or three guys there. Sometimes Joe would be there kind of by himself, right? But he had the ability, like if he drank fairly heavily two nights before the game, he was great. If he didn't, shaky, a little bit shaky. It's like some guys are just wired like that. Whereas I had to get to bed early. Like I had to get like 10 o'clock. I had to be in my bed or I was garbage. I was hot garbage. It's amazing that some of those guys can live on a little bit more beer than the rest.
And I'm the same way as you. It's like, man, if you give me a case of beer, you know, two nights for a game, I'm heavy. But no, I'm like you. I need the sleep. But some guys can pull it off. And another teammate is we had a walk-on. Now, this was freshman year, I think. This guy named Surrey Wood, who was just a walk-on from a frat. This guy could throw him back. I mean, he is a legend. And so so he shows up one time. One thing about Coach Williams is you're never late. You're 10 minutes early. You do not want to show up late for Coach Williams ever. So this guy, we're in New York. He shows up not late, but like 10 minutes late. And we're like, oh, boy. And so, you know, we get back. And, you know, to shorten the story, we get back to Chapel Hill. We fly back. And Surrey had obviously gone out the night before and had a lot of drinks. And so not only was he late, he thought he was going to practice. So he showed up to the bus as we were leaving New York in a practice uniform and walks by Coach. He goes, Coach, I'm ready for practice. Doesn't have his luggage or anything. We're leaving New York to go back to Chapel Hill. He thinks we're going to practice. And so we get back to Chapel Hill and Coach tells him, like, everyone, meet me in the gym, practice, get your Surrey, get your practice gear on. So Surrey already has it. He just walks out into the gym and he looks at Jonas. He's like, Jonas, warm him up. And so Jonas, being funny, goes, Surrey, take two laps around the gym. And so he just circles the gym. That guy ran 27:33s that day. It's the most anybody has ever run under Coach Williams. And we always talk about that story, how he survived 27:33s. It was amazing. But that guy had ran more than anybody in Coach Williams' history of coaching, which is very impressive.
I'll give you a great this one. I got to have Coach on at some point. So there's a famous game at Oklahoma State. So Bryant Reeves, you remember? You know the name Big Country. Mm-hmm. So Kansas plays Big Country in old Gallagher Arena, tiny little place, 6,300 seats, 6,400 seats. And Country against Greg Ostertag has 33-20. So the last home game of the year, they play Nebraska and they win the Big Eight. And it's on like a Thursday night. And I think they played on like a Sunday on CBS in Fog Allen. So they all go out. Or maybe they play on a Saturday game on Wednesday. So they all go out on a Thursday night. Thursday night in Stillwater is the big night. So they go out and they just get completely shit canned. Everybody except Bryant Reeves. He drank beer, but he wasn't senior year. He wasn't going out. He had a couple beers, went to sleep. So the other star was a guy named Randy Rutherford, who's one of the great shooters in the history of college basketball. So they got practice like at 9 in the morning, and then they're leaving for Lawrence. So coach the same way, you know, 15 minutes before, you're taped, you're loose, you're shooting. So practice starts on time. These dudes walk in at like 9:10. Stinking drunk, you know. And one of the first like warm up shooting drills is curl shooting, you know, where it's like acting like you're coming off a pin down, you're shooting elbow pull ups. And Randy Rutherford, great shooter, misses everything, hits one of the blocks. So coach is like, he knows something's up, right? So he takes everybody downstairs, except for Randy, and runs the shit out of them. They're throwing up and whatever, you know, out of T.O. So disrespectful to Kansas and to Oklahoma State. Remember, Bryant Reeves did not drink, did not go out, was the only starter on time for practice. So they go up to Lawrence, Kansas. They play against Jock Vaughn, those guys, national TV. Randy Rutherford, who could drink a beer, put it down, go out and hoop, he had 46. Bryant Reeves did not go out. Coach didn't run him. Didn't have a point.
Wow.
Not a single freaking point. Not one. Didn't pee a drop.
That is, I mean, it's just amazing. It's amazing. And I wonder if I'd probably encourage you guys to go out more, but that's a great story.
It is interesting. Like, I mean, you obviously would have killed it in with NIL, right? I mean, they just, I can't imagine. But there is something to, it's like, it's hard to explain to kids, because I do understand that there's a financial aspect of it where you can go make a lot of money. But just like jumping off, I remember I was at ESPN. Like, guys are jumping off a roof. Like, that was a story. Like, that's college. It's fun. It's time you're never going to get back. And experiences you simply don't have at the professional level, because the professional level, you've experienced it. You get done. You go do your own thing. Because you're a pro. You're an adult. People have families.
Mm-hmm. And the other aspect is, like, you know, you talk about some of the best stories when you look back on your college days, or, you know, when you walk in and, you know, you have that hard practice, like coach puts you on the line, just runs you to death. I feel like coaches aren't doing that as much, because players will just leave because of the transfer portal. And, you know, looking back on my days, I was like, man, you remember that practice we ran in 88? And, you know, you're like, yeah. And, like, that wouldn't happen. And a lot of those stories that, you know, that stuff makes you tougher as a player, mentally, physically, all that stuff. And, you know, I just feel like there's an aspect to the transfer portal that teaches kids, which I don't like, is when, and I talked about this on my podcast last episode, is I don't like the portal because kids can leave in the middle of the year. And, you know, it teaches them when things aren't going right, they can just pack their bags and go and expect a different situation with the same mindset at another school. And that, and like, it's not teaching kids how to handle failure, or, you know, how to change things and make things better, even though things aren't going your way, which I have a big issue with the portal right now. That's what I don't like. And I understand it. If you allow the coaches, kind of like what the Notre Dame coach did to their football team a few years ago, and to go to LSU, if you allow him to do that in their most important time of their season, you got to allow the kids. But I don't like the aspect of either one. I think you should stay for the whole year. And I think, you know, these stories that we're talking about, you know, kids don't have that experience today.
Okay. You get ready for your senior year. Okay. You've beaten Duke 3 times in Cameron. I want to get to the national championship and winning it and what that's like. But the last trip into Cameron, what do you remember?
The last trip into Cameron. Let me see here. I can't remember. All right. So that was a February game. What I remember from that game is, I think we controlled the game somewhat. But I remember Ty had a huge spurt where he took over the game late. And I felt like that really secured the win for us. I thought Ty had a really good game in Cameron and played well. But yeah, to get that fourth win there, and, you know, for our freshman class to go unbeaten at Cameron was a huge deal. And also, we could talk a lot of smack to Duke fans and everything.
Has anyone ever done that? Has there ever been a class that's won all 4 times?
I think there had just one other, and I'm not sure. I think Buzz Peterson told me they did it. I'm not really sure, but I have to fact check him. But I think one other class did it. But yeah, that was special, going undefeated there. And then obviously we played Duke my senior year in the Smith Center. And so obviously we didn't want to leave with an L on senior night. Obviously we remember how JJ and Sheldon left. And so, you know, that game had a lot of emotions in it, because you're dealing with all your family, all your tickets. It's your last home game, your last time, but also you got to stay focused on the game. It's tough to do that. And so I remember that game. We pretty much dominated. I think we controlled that game through and throughout. It was a Sunday game. And I remember actually Michael Jordan being there, which I thought was really cool as well. Anytime he's in the building. Yeah. And that's what I remember about, you know, beating Duke my senior year both times.
What memories do you have of that NCAA tournament run? Because I remember the OU game, right? Against you against Blake.
Yep.
I remember the Nova game. That was when they were playing 4 guards. Mm-hmm. You know, that was their big thing. And I remember the national championship game. It wasn't close against Michigan State. What do you remember about it?
So the tournament, we played LSU, I think it was a second round. Mm-hmm. And that was our closest game. And Ty had been dealing with a lot of, you know, foot stuff. I think it was a toe injury. And so I think he might have left the game or something, but I think they had Marcus Thornton, if I recall right, who really got hot. And that was a that was the closest game we had. And actually, I think they took the lead maybe in the second or whatever, but it came down. It was right to the wire. And I think it was in North Carolina. It was either in Charlotte or Greensboro.
Greensboro.
Yep.
Greensboro Coliseum.
Yep. And so, you know, I would say that being close to home had a huge impact. And so it was packed out with Carolina fans. And I don't know if that would have been more of a neutral site if we would have pulled that off, because that was a shaky game. And we took that one late. But then every game after that game, we pretty much cruised. And then, you know, we handled Nova, which was a big game for Wayne Ellington, because Wayne is from Philly. And so that was bragging rights, but also was on a big stage. And Nova was a tough team. But OU, they had Blake Griffin, who was the National Player of the Year that year, who, you know, obviously he went on to have an amazing career. And he was getting a lot of hype and putting up some big stats, explosive player. So that was – we controlled that game. We also – I think we played Gonzaga in the Sweet 16. But we – Gonzaga a few years before had beaten us in the Garden, Madison Square Garden, and they were a tough team. And so I think that was a big reason why we were so motivated against Gonzaga. We knew they were a tough team. They had some good players, but we came out and pretty much dominated that one. And then we get to the national championship game, which obviously Gonzaga, Oklahoma, then Nova. Now we have Michigan State. So Michigan State, we had played in December and smacked them again pretty handily. And that was around when the economy was really bad. And there was a lot of hype about, hey, Michigan State, it's just their destiny. They're going to save the whatever. And so I think Coach Williams had said that, something like that to us. He was just finding something to motivate us. I don't know if he believed that or not or what.
Well, it was in Detroit. Yeah. You're playing Michigan State in Detroit, yeah. Right? Ford Field. You'd beaten them by 37. Earlier in the year, or 33, yeah, 36, excuse me, earlier in the year. Mm-hmm. I mean, smack the crap out of them.
Yeah.
So what was Coach Williams like for the game?
We were ready to go. And to me, we were the most talented team. And I just felt like even if we played an average game, I think we win that one. And they play a good game. And that's just being honest. That may be a little cocky, but that's the way I felt. We had a lot of good players. Draymond is a very good pro, but he wasn't Draymond at Michigan State.
He was heavy. Yeah. He was heavy. Yeah. That wasn't even a great Michigan State team. Yeah. Like, right? They beat upset Maryland was the big upset that kind of propelled them on that run.
Yeah. And they had an injury early in the game to one of their key players.
Yeah.
And so we just steamrolled them. And I think the game was pretty much at halftime, I felt like, you know, they needed a miracle to even make it a game. And so, you know, we cruised to a win, but that was a good way for me to go out in my class after.
You think? You think?
So there was a lot of
– I mean, think about this, okay? Like, you're a kid from a small town in Missouri. You go to North Carolina, and you beat Duke all four times. You're an All-American. Your ACC play of the year, and you progressively get better, right? Mm-hmm. You lose in the Final Four, you come back, you win the national championship. How is there a better storybook ending to a career?
There's not. And to me, I put a lot of pressure on myself. And there's a lot of outside pressure that, you know, people would, well, if you didn't win a national championship, would you be considered a great college player? And so that... You know, it wasn't about in my mind, I tried to make it up. Well, we're not going to put too much value on one game, but it is a big deal. I mean, if I didn't leave a national champion, especially after everything that our class and myself had accomplished, I would feel like there's always something in the back of my, well, you know, I didn't achieve this. The ultimate goal, you know, we came up short. But to go out that way, one is a big pressure relief, but also it's the best way to end it and to have that feeling. I remember, when we had the game and I subbed out, I walked over and dapped up Coach Williams. But I remember I saw Coach Holiday, he pretty much took care of me in college and gave me a lot of advice. I remember giving him a big hug and, seeing excitement on his face, but also, being excited. I almost felt like he was, so happy for what we had accomplished and so proud of us that feeling of winning the national championship and giving him a hug after we won, that was one of the best feelings I've had.
All right, put the truth to the John Wall story. Okay, so John Wall says that he was visiting Carolina, and you didn't want to talk to him because you don't talk to recruits. That was a story he told on the podcast. What's the reality?
I stand by my tweet. I don't know what he's talking about, and the story did not happen. It's not true to me. I don't know why he would make this up. I can't answer that, and that's for him. But there's no animosity or anything towards John Wall. I will say I do not believe this story, and I'm having a hard time figuring out when he visited Carolina. I know he's a local kid, and some people are making.
Were you ever a host? Were you a host for recruits?
Yeah, I mean, and that's something I need to do. I need to have a recruit on. I remember Spencer Hawes came on his visit to Carolina, yeah. Had a great time. And so I need to have somebody on that was a recruit and, kind of explain what it was like being a recruit at Carolina. I definitely, I talked to recruits, showed them a lot of respect. And if I didn't, Coach Williams, it would not be a good situation. I don't care what you accomplish at Carolina. If you ever big time a recruit, Coach Williams, you'd pay for that.
The crazy part about it, and you alluded to it, was like Kentucky people forever gave me shit because they got Eric Bledsoe and John Wall. It didn't make any sense that both those guys would go there unless there was a different reason they were going there. Right? I mean, like, what are we talking about here? Like, come on, man. Like, we weren't. And so we've been around this way too long to go like, oh, they get John Wall and DeMarcus Cousins and they get Bledsoe and they get 2-point guards that both need the ball in their hands. And they just happened to go there because opportunity to play for Kentucky. Like, get the fuck out of here.
Hey, and the best part about it, Kentucky fans are the easiest fans to really like. Say one thing about Kentucky. Your timeline, I mean, it is guaranteed like, oh, you're getting destroyed. And that's been the best part about it, is just reading the comments from the Kentucky fans. And I follow you on Twitter. You're great on Twitter. And I always love how you go at some of these comments. And me and my podcast partner, we've been having a great time trying to, should we attack this person and blah, blah, blah. It's been pretty great.
Did you guys get anything at CAD Carolina? Like anything in terms of, we didn't get shit, nothing. But Coach obviously had the reputation from Kentucky, fair or unfair. Well, how about you guys?
No, we didn't get anything. No, I mean, I went here because of Coach Williams. I didn't go here for any other reason. So
crazy. Funny. That's one of the reasons that Coach Sutton respected Coach Williams, is he always felt like they did it the right way, mm-hmm. And then everybody does that tour right afterwards, but I'm sure you didn't do it, right? Where they do the barnstorming tour and they play games.
Yeah, I did that.
After they're done playing. Mm-hmm. And you did?
Yeah, it was a great time. I mean, so once you're done playing, all the schools, we all kind of get together and go play exhibition games around local towns and make a little bit of money. So that, yeah, it was a good way. I mean, yeah, all the schools around here did it.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables. Ooh, yum. And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Winning is an everyday mindset. And we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win.
How do you play? How do you work when you're not at your best?
Coach Cal and I'll share some wisdom from our time coaching, and we'll apply that wisdom to your off-court challenges.
You gotta win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Why are you so bad at golf when you're playing with Frazier and Wes Miller? Why do they constantly?
Well, first of all, you know, Wes is, you know, there's some sneaky ways that sometimes you just see a ball that goes directly in the woods and somehow ends up in the fairway. I'm not calling anybody a cheater, but there's been some suspect times. Now, I did get my handicap down to about an 8. So I was rolling at one point, but I haven't played as much because I've been coming back from some knee surgeries, and I've really, really gotten into pickleball.
These sound like excuses. I think it's because the switch that you flip, okay, that doesn't work in golf. Like it just doesn't work in golf. I think it's the switch. I think if you were T-bone, you would win, but you go psycho T. And that's why you lose all these golf matches. That's my personal assessment.
I have learned that golf is to mentally challenge you every time you step on the course. And once I heard a golfer say that, I started calming down. And the best part about golf is when you hit it in the woods and you just can barely see the flag, and you're like, man, should I pull my 5-wood out and just drill it 275 yards straight missile and just kind of land it on the edge of the green? Or should I use a club that I'm actually decent with, my 7-iron, and just kind of hit it out there and then put myself in position?
Just punch it out, take your medicine.
Once I started taking my medicine, I got a lot better. But Frazier, there's nobody that golfs more than Frazier, and so his game's gotten really good. So I'm going to have to start putting a lot of work in. And by the way, Coach Williams is he's my partner, and so there's nobody that puts more pressure on me to start working on my game than Coach Williams. He's also a really, really good putter. And so whenever we're about to go on these golf trips or whatever, I'll get a call. Hey, big fella, you working on your game? From Coach Williams, because he knows I'm going to be his partner.
He seems like a good shit talker too. I bet there's some good trash talking when he's your partner and you guys are going against the other side.
100%. And he tells me in the car, he's like, all right, they're just beating us. Now I'm going to have to start talking and mentally get after him. And so that's what he does.
All right, last thing to end part one, because I want to do your life now and I want to do professional basketball. I got two. One is, I don't know if you remember, so draft night, I was working ESPN radio and I had been on SportsCenter and I said, like, you know, I don't know what I said. I said, you know, like, my eval on you was like, man, you'd be a good enforcer, worker, like, I don't, you know, top end, like, you know, like a top end out as an all-star, whatever. And you sat down and the switch had been flipped. You were a first round pick in the Indiana Pacers. And it was like you were ready to go. What do you remember? It was almost like whatever energy you had taken from, whether it's my draft analysis or sitting there waiting or what it was, like you were ready to go. What was that like for you, considering you're a competitor, you want to win everything, and you sat there longer despite the fact that you won a national championship and you had all those accolades?
Yeah, well, for me, we knew that going into the draft, I wasn't going to be a top 10 pick. And a lot of that for me being at the draft was because of my agent told me they wanted me there because of my college career to begin with. And we felt like I would be an earlier first round. I wasn't going to be sitting there in the second for sure. We knew that. And we felt like we had a ceiling at, I would say around 15, actually. I think it was maybe been somewhere. We had a commitment in the mid to late teens. And so we started working our way up. And actually, I had a second draft workout for the Nets. And they had taken Terrence Williams. And I had a really, really good workout for them, my first workout. Then they brought me in a couple of days before the draft, and then I had a better workout. And so I was like, they might take me. And so I felt pretty optimistic about that. But when it got down to it, I remember sitting there, and I didn't really even pay attention to many analysts, or I wasn't really paying attention to what everyone was saying. I was just trying to do my workouts and then trying to go from there and try to cut out the outside noise at the time. So I didn't know what anybody else was saying. But I remember when Indiana came up, I had a pretty good workout. I left there feeling pretty good. And when they're about to pick, you know, we kind of felt like there was a chance. And I looked over at Coach, and Coach Williams was like, I think this is where you're going to go. And my agent at the time said, I don't think so. And so when Indiana called my name, obviously I was super excited. And yeah, I was very excited about being in Indiana. Obviously Larry Bird. And so getting there, you know, I was pretty motivated. But when I got to Indiana, obviously I had a lot of injuries my first year, and really struggled with some of those injuries. But yeah, getting drafted was a huge deal, going late lottery.
You had a workout. This is the one I heard. Okay. You had a workout in Atlanta. Okay. With, I think, Sean Taggart from Memphis. Any recollection of this workout?
I remember working out for Atlanta. Huh? I don't remember
okay.
the specifics.
So here's the story that I was told. That Sean Taggart's kid played at Memphis, super talented. Right. And Atlanta loved you because of specifically like this workout where, you know, you used to tug on your shorts all the time, right? That was like your thing. You tug on your shorts. So you're playing one-on-one. He gets the ball, shot fakes, lifts you up, goes by, and you go to block his shot, and you don't block a shot. You clobber that fucker, right? Just hammer him. And you go back like to the free throw line, like tugging on your shorts, like ready for, you know, it's a foul, next play, whatever. He gets up like, what the fuck, man? Like, you know, right? Like he wants to go. And their desire to take you was because they had some young, immature, big dudes. And they're like, we want Tyler Hansbrough to play like that every day in practice to see if you can get by, if you can practice against Tyler Hansbrough every day, then you'll be fine in the NBA. That's my favorite pre-draft story of Tyler Hansbrough.
I believe that. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, Atlanta was one of those teams that I felt pretty comfortable. Obviously Jeff Teague worked out pretty good for him. But yeah, they were later on, and we left that one pretty solid.
Have you ever seen the movie Over the Top? It's an old Sylvester. All right, here's the project I have for you. Okay. You get somebody or whatever, you get a free night, throw it on. And here's why. Okay. The switch that you flip when you play basketball is you'll see it with Sly Stallone. So he's a truck driver that's in like arm wrestling tournaments. Okay. And he's one guy when his hat's on forward. And then when he flips the hat on backwards, like he's like a different dude. That's the switch that you had when you play basketball. It's like a glazed look over your face. There's nothing going to stop you from competing and trying to win. So watch that one and tell me if you think that's a fair comp.
All right, I'll watch that and get back to you for sure. Yeah.
Okay. So your assignment is that, and then we need Ben stories. We need NBA stories. Okay, and we need to figure out your golf game, because the text I'm getting from Wes, he's texting me scores and how much money he's taken off of you. And it's just not a good look.
Man, Wes is talking a lot of shit.
Yeah.
When I took that hundo off of him that one time.
What's the course?
He plays Eagle Point. Yeah, I don't know if he played Eagle Point. We've played everywhere, but we play Eagle Point. If you've been to Durham, Old Chatham, that's where I play. But yeah, we play some good courses. And Chapel Hill's their main course. Finley's getting redone right now, but Wes can turn it on. Actually, I hate to say this, but I pull my 3-wood out on the tee box. I hit my 3-wood really good, pretty straight.
So do I. I'm same thing. Right?
But it's the ego takes a blow just pulling. I want the big stick. I want the driver. And so I recently got something I'm hitting pretty good with the drives. So I think it's going to add a whole new dynamic to my game. And I'm on about my 20th putter. So we'll see what happens.
How can someone get your podcast?
It's on every platform. It's Sleep Hawk Worldwide. Click in, listen to it. We're on every Spotify, Apple, everywhere.
Hey, man, I appreciate you taking all this time. It was awesome. Let's schedule part due, and then we can go anywhere you want with the next one. But I appreciate you. Look forward to listening to your pod. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Doug. I'll talk to you, man.
All right, that's it for the amateur part of Tyler Hansbrough's career. I want to know what it was like in the NBA. I want to know what it was like to be the guy who was the college star and yet now had to be a role player in the NBA. What's it like to walk away from the NBA? What's it like to be Tyler Hansbrough now being around college basketball games? What's it like to watch his coach, Roy Williams, who he's so close with, retire? Joe Holiday, retire. We talked about in part one. All that's upcoming in part three. In the meantime, remember, download, subscribe, rate, write a review. And don't be afraid to tweet it out or put it on Facebook. Tell people that if you like Duke Carolina, how could you not like catching up with Tyler Hansbrough? Thanks so much, T-Bone, for joining us. I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is All Ball.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win.
How do you play? How do you work when you're not at your best?
Coach Cal and I'll share some wisdom from our time coaching, and we'll apply that wisdom to your off-court challenges.
You gotta win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.